that streaming services bring so much to the comfort of the couch and the phone, it might not seem as critical as it once did to own a movie or an album in the sense that you could actually hold it in your hand.
The vinyl record, the CD, the DVD, the VHS tape, even the paper book has been the subject of debate and concern over its future. But we haven't given up all of our collections just yet. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're talking about the physical media we still treasure on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Stephen today from his home studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Culture Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And also here from her home is Aisha Harris. Hey, Aisha.
Hey there. I have not been removed from HBO Max yet, so we're we're all good here.
Yeah, we are. It's always fun when we're all together. I do think that this is an interesting moment to have that conversation because we are watching a bunch of stuff get removed from HBO Max, some of which is, you know, shows that HBO actually made, you know, that they showed on HBO, like regular shows, some of which are animation. I do think that it has caused people to think a little bit about what they stream and what they keep. We are just going to go around and we are each going to talk about something that we treasure that we have on physical media. Now, we have not shared these picks, so you will be seeing our true shock and surprise at each other's choices. Aisha, I'm going to start with you. Tell me something that you own on physical media and you treasure.
Well, I actually have to say that you all have actually heard about this before, but it was a long time ago, and it is the thing I most treasure. So it wouldn't feel true if I picked something else. I've gone through a phase of growing up, you had the CDs, you had the DVDs, VHS, all those things. And then once I hit college, you have to downsize with your dorm room, dorm living. And I got rid of a lot of stuff. And then I started collecting things again. Then I went back to downsizing again because I was moving into small New York apartments. Lately, I've decided I've gone back to physical media, and I think I will be back to physical media from now on, especially in light of all of this news. And so the thing that I most treasure, I've actually had for, I'd say, close to 20 years now at this point, and it is my Two Dicks DVD. I actually have it here, of Singing in the Rain.
Nice. Oh,
yeah. It came out for the 50th anniversary, so this would have been 2002, yes. One of the reasons I love it is because, first of all, it has so much extra material. There's two discs. It includes the movie, of course, but also some documentaries. Some of the music comes from different musicals that came before it and shows. They have actual like performances and of that in other movies. You've got Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney singing Good Morning in an earlier movie. So I love it because you can find all of these things on YouTube piecemeal, but to have it all in one place is ideal. But the other reason I have not let go of it yet is because it is signed by none other than Debbie Reynolds herself.
Oh.
Yes.
All right.
Well, sure. Okay.
When you have a favorite movie or a favorite comic book or TV show, whatever, your favorite person from that work of art cannot sign a digital copy. It's not possible. Like, it's not the same. I know there are NFTs. I don't believe in those things. I met Debbie Reynolds. I knew I was going to hopefully meet her when I went to see her perform like a one-woman show. My cousin, his friend, her father, there's some degrees of separation. Her father worked at a symphony or locally. And so she invited us. I got to see the show. She was wonderful, fabulous. She did some jokes about Eddie Fisher, her ex-husband who left her for Elizabeth Taylor. It was great. And then I met her afterwards and I brought my copy of Singing in the Rain.
Excellent.
Because what else are you going to do?
I admire that.
It is my most prized possession. I will love it until the day that I die. And it is never leaving my side.
That is awesome. I am cowed by the greatness of that that opening pick. So Aisha owns her copy. I had that set too, but mine is not signed. And I am not sure if I still have it anywhere. Glenn, we are going to go to you. Give me your pick.
I mean, this was tough for me because I am not now and have never been a sensualist, contain your shock. I mean, these people who go on and on about the smell and the feel of a book and a comic and the roundedness of tone from a vinyl record.
We love you, all of you. We love you who feel this way.
The rebuttal is coming, don't worry.
What I am instead, and there's not a word for it yet, so I'm going to try to coin one right now, is a conveniencealist.
Sure.
I am a creature who was made for these times. Boy, give it to me at the click of a button, and I'm happy. What do you need? My social security number? A cheek scraping? Sure. I don't care. Give it to me. Compress those files. I can't hear the difference. Doesn't matter. The notion of ordering something and waiting to get it in a few weeks? What is this, Little House in the Big Woods? What am I, ordering a packet of seeds to plant in the spring? No, it's 2022. We don't have to wait for the Wells Fargo wagon anymore. But here's my thing. I spent my early teens and 20s accumulating comics. I say accumulating because I never considered myself a collector. I still don't, because I was reading them for the stories and for the art and for the characters, right? I was living in the moment. I didn't bag and board anything. I didn't organize them. I didn't fret over their physical condition, because I always thought of that as a completely separate pursuit. That story becomes an object. I'd never have gotten that. But there is one exception. One time I have bagged and boarded a comic, and that was a comic I bought when I was 14 years old. It was New Teen Titans number one. This was in 1982. But it had debuted 2 years earlier in 1980 with New Teen Titans number one. This was before there was any way to research something as stupid and ephemeral as how a specific team of superheroes came together for the first time. Nowadays, all that stuff, even the stupidest stuff, even the most ridiculous stuff, is wikied. This was pre-wiki. So the only way for me to know how Robin, Wonder Girl, Kid Flash, Starfire, Raven, Cyborg, and Beast Boy came together for the first time was for me to read New Teen Titans number one. It was a very successful series, so successful that I never found any of it in back issue bins, and I tried, but every time I walked into Fat Jack's Comic Crypt on Sansom Street in Philadelphia, there it was, hanging on the wall for $25. That was ridiculous. That was insulting. That comic was less than 2 years old. It originally sold for 50 cents. How dare they? Capitalism will get you, right? Because here was this meager supply, and I was just one big ball of demand. So I, a 14-year-old boy who got a buck and a half a week for weeding the garden and mowing the lawn, I spent $25 on a comic book. If you're doing the math, that's 50 times its cover value.
It's like a half a year of your income.
I know.
Totally. And when I finally read it, it was like, fine. that was fine. It was fine, I guess. But I still have it. And it's not because I care about what it's worth today, because it's not worth anything today. Because that story has been reprinted dozens of times. You can download it with the click of a button. But I'm holding on to that thing for the rest of my damn life because, to be honest, I do like knowing I have it, because I do like knowing when I pull it out and read it, I am reading it in exactly the same way I read it back then. There is a certain frisson to seeing things like the ads, right? Because you don't get those in reprints. But mainly I'm holding on to it as a cautionary tale because it was 50 times the cover price. And I'm an idiot.
Aw. I remember spending $25 on a Beanie Baby once. That was
okay, and did you still have it?
I'm sure it's somewhere in my mom's basement.
And that okay. has only skyrocketed in value.
Yep, yep, yep. All right. Well, thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Next time I see you, I will have you show me your Teen Titans number one. I didn't know Robin was in Teen Titans. I don't know anything about Teen Titans.
Yeah, bring gloves.
That is slabbed in Lucite to within an inch of its life.
I will bring gloves and I will read it in a climate-controlled environment.
There we go.
All right, Stephen C. Thompson, what is your pick?
Well, I feel vaguely persecuted by Glenn Weldon's diatribe against collectors. I'm a collector because I come by it honestly. I was raised by two of the world's foremost comic book collectors.
Damn right.
I have been around bagged and boarded comic books since I was an infant. I was not allowed to touch them. I'm probably still not allowed to touch them. Acquiring a collection comes really naturally to me. And I have to say, if you were to parse the why beyond simple biology, it's to have it. I want to have it. I don't want gatekeepers to decide to take it away from me. Because I thought of my mother who had, she's gotten rid of most of them by now, but she had thousands and thousands and thousands of videotapes going back to the 1970s of shows she had taped off of the air, not because they were collectible, but because she wanted to have them. I want everything in circulation. And so having collections, I have a large collection of CDs, I have a large collection of vinyl records and DVDs. So what I selected as my most treasured piece of physical media is the several Rubbermaid containers that I own containing my collection of Atari 2600 cartridges. Now, you can get reproductions of these things, you can get emulators. They don't compare. Glenn is shaking his head over the Zoom right now.
Yes, he is.
But I can, he's not tisking. I can feel you tisking, Glenn. Part of the reason that I've assembled this collection is because I have a childhood association with loving those games and loving the experience of having a big pile of cartridges and chunking them into the Atari 2600 and plucking them out of the Atari 2600. I like that experience of gameplay. And if you put that in an emulator, it isn't the same. They're never going to be reproduced. But like when I was a kid, I was like, oh my God, there are these forbidden games. There's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre game for the Atari 2600. Parents were legitimately upset.
Mm-hmm.
That is what people were upset about. And I love that. So to me, of all the physical media I own, the only one I still to this day have recurring dreams about is Atari 2600 cartridges. I have a dream that's a recurring dream where I go to some thrift store and I find a box of old Atari 2600 cartridges. And how I know it's a dream is because I've had that dream so many times and I'm like, I'm too happy.
Oh,
it's that dream again.
Wow.
I hear you. Well, the thing that's amazing about the stuff that I own is that it is such a mix of things I have very intentionally kept and things that I have sort of accidentally kept, mm-hmm. where I'll be like, all of a sudden I'll find, you know, the ABC pilots from 2006, 2007, because I just never got rid of it. For a long time, I still had my sci-fi screener of Piranaconda, which I treasured because it came with the special effects not finished. The thing that's amazing is, you know, I used to do these trips to the mall where I would just sort of look for things that I was interested in. And I realized that I still have like the CD soundtracks of a bunch of like, I have the soundtrack of my best friend's wedding.
Oh,
I have the soundtrack of It Could Happen to You with Bridget Fonda and Nicolas Cage, a movie that I don't remember liking that much, although I know I owned it on VHS because that's the other thing I did. Around the same time, I would go to the mall and I would pick up VHS copies of movies that I liked, even if I didn't like them that much. And it would kind of be like, well, of all the things they have, this is the thing I like the most. So I would wind up with like IQ with Meg Ryan and Walter Matthau as Albert Einstein.
Yeah. Oof.
I owned the VHS of Bounce with Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh,
a movie about which I remember nothing. And a movie that, as far as I can tell, no one likes.
That's the movie that it was just always, if you went to Circuit City or any of those stores, like, and were just perusing, it'd always be there.
That's probably why. All of which is to say, my most treasured thing is a thing that I can't stream that is very foundational to my being. And it is my DVD collection of Moonlighting, which aired in the 1980s when I was a teenager and absolutely made me a romantic comedy person, a snappy dialogue person, a detective show person, and you cannot stream it. And I bought it at some point on DVD.
But do you actually pull it down and watch them often?
You know where it is right now? It's at the office, where I haven't gone to go through the DVDs in like a couple years. So I'm going to be reunited with it at some point, and I will probably watch it again. But it is true that, as some of you have said, it is more a matter of having it than it is a matter of actually watching it.
Yeah.
Because the fact that something is your favorite thing might actually mean you don't want to watch it too much.
Right.
Because not everything holds up, especially to repeat viewings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The only DVDs that I watch with regularity are my I Love Lucy DVDs. And I'm actually making my way through the whole series again for the 100th millionth time right now.
Yeah.
In terms of like collector versus aesthete versus whatever, one thing I definitely am for damn sure is a completist.
Yeah.
If I like something, I want all of it. Even if I don't watch it all.
Yeah.
There is one thing that has really been lost as we have moved from so much DVD watching to more streaming watching for home viewing. And that is, if you turned on a show, a DVD, to watch the episodes on that DVD, and you fell asleep, you would wake up and it would be going dun, 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 dun. Those DVD menus are a terrible scarring loss.
Oh, yeah. Really, like 30 Rock, where it was like a 10-second loop.
Mm-hmm. And you'd wake up and be like, oh, it's still on, and then you got to turn it off. Because those DVD menus, man. Bow! All right. Well, we want to know what you have collected and don't want to give up. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Aisha Harris, Glenn Weldon, Stephen Thompson, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, sign up for our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. This episode was produced by Candace Lim and Ramel Wood and edited by Mike Katziff and Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.